Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Going on, y'all, and thanks again for catching us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and of course, as always, the man in the studio with me, twisting the knobs and us dialing more stuff in, and we've actually ruined a cable and got to get another one, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I survived the deluge.
I've got web toes. We always talk about the weather. It's something fun for old men to start off
with.
It's been raining like hell on us for quite some time now. I can only feel for y'all, everyone being evacuated along the East Coast. Man, our best thoughts and wishes go to y'all. We have been getting, there's been flash flooding coming that I wasn't expecting, and a lot of stuff washed out, which makes for really craziness at my job. But outside of that, I don't mind the rain. What I do mind is it raining on the weekends. I don't mind it raining during the week at work. I'll deal with it. But on the weekends, I want to be able to go outside. Not here lately. Here lately, it's just been stare at the wall.
Yeah. Now, I know it's been much worse, like in North Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not trying to compare it like that. But, I mean, we have got a lot of rain, like 11 inches, I think.
Yeah.
It's just enough's enough already. You know, a little bit of rain I enjoy, you know. Like, but, man, after like 2 weeks solid, I'm like, enough already.
Yeah. I want to go get back outside. I've got hunting season is starting up. There is a moth in the studio that's flying around over here.
Let me talk to you about that real quick. I don't know what it is, but I have some kind of attractant to moths that want to land on my face. I don't know why. I don't think that
it's that bright and shining smile.
It's maybe that I thought maybe it was my bald head, but it happens even when I wear a hat. They like whatever reason they'll fly around in here and then just smack me in the face as I'm trying to type up stuff. I'm like, what is the deal? Like, seriously, what is the problem with my face? Actually, that's a problem.
I have a long list of that right now if you'd like me to get into it, but we don't have long enough show to get into the problem with your face.
That's a good point. Let's get past that. Well, I took my father, me and my brother, we picked my father up Saturday, and we went to see the new Predator movie. And I have to say, it was not a letdown. It was really good.
Sorry, folks, that's me striking a moth.
Man, what is the deal? The movie was excellent. I was actually surprised because, you know, every time they want to do a remake or a sequel or something, I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
They're going to mess it up. But I have to say, it was very good. It was even a little bit funny. They had like a few comedy scenes almost in it.
Well, I didn't get to go with them, folks. I actually went a little earlier. We couldn't all get on the same page. So I took my family the night it came out and went and saw it and then told Kyle.
Yeah.
And now him and I have been talking about it like crazy. I'm a big fan.
I thought they did a really good job. The storyline was good. It kind of, you know, brought together what the first couple were about, what's going on with their hybridization.
I like the way they laid it out to where they can continue with this storyline.
Well, of course they were going to do that because
I love that part.
Then you're going to make a movie, but they didn't mess it up. Like, it was good.
Yes.
Now, it's not child friendly, so if you have a young one, you know, I wouldn't take them to the movie. It's not just the cursing. But it's just like the material they're cursing about. It's not for young people. And, you know, of course, I thought that while I was there, the person next to me had like a three-year-old with him. I was like, yeah, that's what I'd do on Saturday. I take my three-year-old to see Predator. Giant. Like, what does the face look like?
Yeah.
A human eating alien. Yeah, that's a good thing to subject a child to.
Yeah.
Those were my parents in the 80s.
Yeah, for sure. Those were, yeah. Yeah. I think those were most parents in the 80s.
Yeah, right. They really didn't keep a good eye on people. So, speaking of keeping a good eye, I got a phone call today from one of Caleb's teachers, the science teacher. I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Here we go, right? What could it be? Because the first week of school, he called a young lady a bad name. He got in trouble for that, but apparently the young lady was making fun of his mother. So, you know, that's okay. But anyways, I saw the phone call and I was like, oh, God, what now? Turns out the science teacher wanted to let me know how much of an excellent student Caleb is.
And he can call anybody anything he wants because he's such a good student.
Yeah, she said she's been teaching school for like 27 years and he's a real pleasure. She loves having him in the first class of the day to help make her day better. I'm like, what? Are you sure you got
you got the right number here? Right, kid?
You got the right kid? You know that's a Filson, right? Like, because the Filson's in this town. It's like the Weird and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia. I mean, it's like the list is long. Ever since they immigrated here in the early 80s.
You go take a picture of said child and send it to me before I make sure? Because I don't think we got the right child.
Sorry. Sometimes I think I do too many inside things, jokes. If you don't know what the Weird and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia is, that's an excellent documentary.
You need to do anything and everything in your power to watch it.
Yeah. Once again, not good for kids. I don't think they'd appreciate Joe Bob or what's her name? Sue Bob.
I'm the pretty one.
Sue Bob's the pretty one.
That's right.
And then Django, his dad invented some kind of jig, some kind of dance.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, that impressive. I mean, like, anybody could invent it. I mean, you know what I mean? I was like, that's the claim to fame?
There might be some of them listening right now, and they're going to come over here.
I don't think they got the Greyhound fare to make it this far, Sal.
Here we go. Y'all need to watch it. For real. You need to watch it.
It is gold.
If you haven't seen it.
I mean, like, it's one of the ones, it's the gift that keeps giving, because you'll want to go back and watch it again. I have. You're like, what?
Why haven't they made a part two or three to that? That's something I could get behind.
Because they're probably all dead or in prison.
A Netflix series about that. That's something I could definitely get behind.
Now you're talking.
I'm going to get into the news. Look, I'm going to jump into this. You remember a couple of shows ago, I did a story about some folks in Michigan saw a Bigfoot. And he had a pet with him.
Yeah,
right?
With him. I thought about that during the Predator movie because the Predator had a pet.
I know.
Yeah, folks, spoiler alert, the Predator has a pet.
Not one, but two.
Who knew that?
Yeah.
What do they call them? What's the technical?
Yuntas?
Something like that? Yeah, that's a technical term for the Predator. Anyways, continue.
Okay, so this all goes down from our friends at Cryptozoology News that a man in northern Michigan has released a photograph of this alleged Bigfoot. Now, if you go to that website and look at this picture, it's really interesting. It almost looks gorilla-esque from the back shot that he put, but says that the man, who goes by the name of Jack, claims that he was on a fishing trip when he came upon the seemingly bipedal animal, which he initially thought to be a bear. He said it was about 6 feet tall and had human-like figure. Now, he was describing this to about a week or so ago to Bigfoot Evidence. And now he didn't specify, there was no specification about when the encounter happened, but he said this, it had a high-pitched growl. Now, we made eye contact, and we both froze in our tracks. He says, they elaborate on, say it was a shadowy figure, but that it ran off into the woods. Now, get a load of what Jack does next. He says, I went back later on and camped there just to see if I could get lucky and get more pictures. Said, but it turned out it was empty-handed. Now, he believes in the photograph that he has there is a picture of a juvenile Bigfoot because it's short in stature.
It is a good-looking photograph.
Right? And he says, it's not clear why the eyewitnesses, and this is what it's written, didn't take a video instead of a series of photographs. But it is, if your camera's already set, like it's, say it's a DSLR, even on your phone, on picture, and you have to look away from it and click it to video and get it to queue up.
Yes.
I can kind of understand that gap. Maybe they missed it just for, you know what I mean? Trying to get it going. And so they just went with what they had. Although I would love to see video footage of this.
The picture does look pretty good.
It does look really good. You can't tell anything from it.
No, that's the problem.
You know, it could be a dude in a gorilla suit. I mean, could be a picture of a gorilla. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's hard to tell, but it is a very interesting photograph. But while I'm looking at that one, there is another report that jumped up of another sighting, but this time in Wisconsin, in Barron County. And again, here's on a fishing trip. A man named Bob says that he was fishing in a lake when he spotted the monkey-like creature in plain daylight. Now, he says that this happened back in September of 2011, and he told this whole encounter to Dick Brom, the investigator for the BFRO. Now, Bob goes on to say that it was about 4 p.m. Says, I made a cast and followed my lure when it hit the water, and I noticed movement beyond my lure on the side of the hill, which I know what he's talking about. Every time you make a good long cast, you like to just watch it fly. You know, it's like throwing anything. You're like, that was a good shot. And then he saw movement after it hit the water. Now, he goes to claim that this animal was hanging onto one tree and grabbing another as it came down the hill. And then it stopped for about 2 seconds and looked dead on at the eyewitness. He says, then it continued up the hill that I was about 20 yards away. Now that's a little too close, but this is what he describes. So this thing's coming down the hill, but using trees is balance. He goes on to describe an 8 foot tall, hairy, gray biped. Yeah. And he had apparently some friends with him. They all come forward and said they saw the same exact thing.
Well, that's good that he has other witnesses to corroborate his story.
So,
you know?
A 8 foot tall, hairy, gray Bigfoot. Now, that's not, you know, we've talked about the grays and the whites, different colored Bigfoots instead of just the browns and the blacks, like normal bear colors, you would think. Now you're getting into a gray. The gray thing always, like we talk about the albino Bigfoot or the white, but the gray is something that I always think about as like being just an old Bigfoot.
It's like the elder. I prefer like the brindle or the blue or the calico, like colored.
Could you imagine a calico Bigfoot?
I believe they exist. Why not?
That would be awesome. That would be awesome if that existed.
I'll talk about something that's not awesome. With Halloween approaching, the stories are already starting to increase. And here's a pretty scary one that took place near Rossville, Illinois. The person describes a ghoulish-like humanoid that was running in between some headstones. Check this out. The person says, back when I was in high school, my friend and I saw something I've begun referring to as a crawler. This was in Rossville, Illinois, nighttime and in a cemetery. I think it was probably late summer or early fall because I don't remember it being too cold out. Would have been between the year 2007 and the year 2010. Pretty sure the moon was full or close to it because the visibility was very good. My friend and I used to walk this loop. We would leave her place and go down a block to a side road that led to a park. We would then turn left and cut across the park to the side entrance of the cemetery. Now, the cemetery and park sat at the very southwest corner of town. Beyond that was just woods and lots of cornfields. If we went straight across the cemetery, it would take us to another side road that then led to the main street, back to where her house was. So, we made it to the cemetery that night, and we're walking the main drive that split the property in half. There was a sudden noise that made us both stop. My friend started to laugh nervously and asked if I had heard the noise. I told her I not only heard it, but I saw what made the noise. To our left, I had seen something running behind the headstones. It was on all fours, and it looked humanoid. It had extremely pale skin and no hair and looked very thin. I remember it was so pale it almost reflected the moonlight. It moved so fast, too fast for any human I've ever seen on their hands and feet, that I couldn't see many of the details. It was in total profile, so I never saw the facial details. The way it ran was animal-like, as well as in that it had that gait where its feet came forward almost between or past its hands. Watch any video of a big cat or wild dog running, and you'll see what I mean. Well, needless to say, we were both terrified. We just stood there panicking and listening to it moving around, just out of sight. While we called one of her friends to come meet us and take us the rest of the way home, we just stood there and watched it. Her friend, a very typical high school boy, arrived and naturally wanted to stay in the cemetery and goof off for a while. For some reason, with him there acting dumb, it seemed a lot less scary. But I remember it kept making these wide circles around us. It always stayed just out of sight, but you could hear it as it moved. Occasionally, it would come a bit closer, then seem to dart further away again. Eventually, we left. I spent a while researching it, and even reached out to a paranormal group in Champaign for advice. The guy I talked to had never heard of such a thing, but wanted to document what we saw. We met up with them, and we did an interview. But the group never did an investigation. Fast forward a few years, and I'm living in Aurora, Colorado. I met one of my closest friends in around 2012. We really hit it off because we were into the paranormal and stuff. When I eventually told him about what I had seen, his jaw hit the floor. He told me he had seen the same thing, and he told me his story. Now, he described exactly what I had seen, but he had seen it under a porch while living in Thornton. It was crouched down and squatting. He thinks he startled it while it was eating because he said it was hunched over something that it was holding. Now, he comes from a Navajo Apache background, and when we first met, his best guess was that it could have been a skinwalker or a Wendigo. But then, and especially now, he said he has doubts about either of those things being the answer. He was dating a girl at the time whose mom claimed to be a medium. She said she thought it was something that someone woke up, and that now it was angry. We both have serious doubts on that one. The stranger part came when he and I brought it up. We both started having very intense nightmares about it all over again. His were worse than mine and lasted much longer. This was also punctuated by a six-month period of time filled with a lot of bad luck and anxiety for us. I always sort of brushed this off as just psyching ourselves out until I sent my story into a podcast. After it was read there, another listener sent in their story. They described what my friend and I had both seen. They also described the sightings as being punctuated by nightmares. I couldn't write that off because he spoke about his nightmares in detail, and they matched my friend's nightmares almost exactly. I've never given out any of the details of what actually happened in either of our nightmares. I've read a ton of your stories by others and people on the internet, and I've dug through mounds of lore and cryptid lists. I still don't feel like I have a great answer to what this thing is. My best guess at this point is that the nightmares aren't coincidental and that this is something that is interdimensional. It seems like it can interact with physical things around it, but I've never heard anyone tell a first-hand account of being physically attacked or even touched. I speculated on what it could have been for hours, and the only conclusion that I've come to is that I don't feel like there's an actual concrete answer. It doesn't act exactly like this or like that cryptid. I think it might be something that's been around and inspired other cryptids and paranormal tales, but I don't think it's a Wendigo, skinwalker, ghoul, fleshgate, etc. So that's a pretty cool story. Now, this listener wrote this into Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters. It kind of reminds me of, like, The Rake, right? A story like that. Mm-hmm. Or, like, even the description she gives is, like, of Gollum.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something emaciated, something pale, something with only a little bit of hair on it, slurking, you know, around these headstones, checking them out, circling them, testing the limits, and then backing away. Very creepy, right?
Yeah, that's not cool at all.
Like a vampire's familiar or
yes.
Something. I don't know.
I'm not down with that.
But let's take a break, folks. And after the break, we're going to get into one of everyone's favorite cryptids. That's right, folks. We're going to be talking about Bigfoot. Stick with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Thank you. Over the years, we've told hundreds of stories of strange encounters in the woods. Everyday people who see something they can't explain. Something they've heard of, but never truly believed existed. Many of them fear ridicule or mockery if they come forward with their story. So in the end, they keep quiet. I personally know a few people who have had some strange encounters who have never told anyone other than me. Because of our show, they know that I'm open-minded and would hear their story without any judgment. What I'm talking about specifically on this show today is Bigfoot. That's right. Everyone's favorite cryptid, or at least the most popular cryptid. I mean, it's even had its own running TV show dedicated to finding him for like 6 years now. I know some of you are screaming at me right now through your headset that Bigfoot is not your favorite cryptid, and that you, like me, you like the Dogman or the Chupacabra better or something else. And I, too, must confess, my favorite cryptid is probably the Jinmakin. You know, the dog with the human face on it. Now, some of you are like, what is he talking about? But I assure you, I'm not making this up. It's a Japanese cryptid, and I'll even put links to it in the show notes. But back to Bigfoot, or Sasquatch, or Almas, or Yowie, Yeti, Yeren, whatever you want to call it, it's the same story all over the world. Cultures from every continent seem to have their own version of this hairy beast. So, the million-dollar question is it real? If so, how? How do we not have any skeletal record of such a beast nowhere, not on any continent? Certainly, someone somewhere would have found something by now. I'm sure some of you are saying, Kyle, they have found physical proof. You dolt. What about the footprints, the plaster casts, even some of the vocal recordings? The wood knocks, what about the hair? What about the Yeti scalps and the Yeti hand? I know, I've seen them too. I've been told over the years by hundreds of people all sorts of sightings of strange things in the woods that resemble the legendary Bigfoot. Even one of my own family members, that's right, my aunt, who lived in Seattle for a while, said that one day she saw something by the road while driving through the country. If it's not real, then why do so many people have these sightings from all over the globe? I don't know. But on today's show, I'm going to be talking about some of these bizarre sightings. Let's start by a strange encounter that happened back in September of 1941 in broad daylight to a Native American family named Chapman. Just like Aroldis Chapman, the pitcher. Now, first off, I must state that several scientists and universities, especially long ago, this was in 1941, claimed that Native American stories were pure fiction and dismissed them as legend. In some cases, even laughed them off because Native Americans were not supposed to be reliable. And this is another problem seen in other places across the globe. For whatever reason, many people disregard stories told by indigenous people as pure myth or folklore. I don't know why. Just because they are an older culture, why are their stories perceived as not being real or legitimate? I tend to believe some of these stories. But anyways, let's get back to the Chapman family. Now, the Chapman family consisted of a guy named George and his wife, Jeannie Chapman, and four children. Mr. Chapman worked on the local railroad and was living at that time in a small place called Ruby Creek. It was 30 miles up the Fraser River from Agassiz, British Columbia, in Canada's Great Western Province. The incident took place at about 3 in the afternoon of a sunny, cloudless day when Jeannie Chapman's eldest son, then aged 9, came running to the house saying that there was a cow coming down out of the woods at the foot of the nearby mountain. Now, at this point, Miss Chapman thought this was a bit odd since they and none of their neighbors had any cattle. And cows don't normally head up mountains to graze when there's plenty of food down here to eat. Now, the other kids, a boy aged 7 and a little girl of 5, were still playing in a field behind the house bordering some railroad tracks. Miss Chapman went out to look to check up on them to see what they were doing, since the boy, who told her the story about the cow, seemed oddly disturbed. and they saw what at first she thought was a very big bear moving about among the bushes bordering the field beyond the railroad tracks. She called to her two children, who came running immediately. Then the creature moved on to the tracks, and she saw to her horror that it was a gigantic man covered with hair, not fur. The hair seemed to be about 4 inches long all over, and of a pale yellow or brown color. The terrified woman took a blanket, gathered up all of her children, and hightailed it out of there to the nearby village. Now, a researcher and author known as Ivan T. Sanderson wrote about it in the March 1960 edition of True Magazine, that he heard about the story and then went and interviewed Miss Chapman. Now, I love Ivan T. Sanderson. I've read several of his books. He is, along with John Keel, one of my favorite authors. Of course, I got to throw Nick Redfern in there as well. But anyways, he went to interview Miss Chapman, and she told him that the creature advanced directly towards the house, and she said she took too much time to look at it because she stood her ground outside while the eldest boy was following her instructions. He got a blanket from the house and rounded up the other children. The kids were in a near panic, she told them, and it took 2 or 3 minutes to get the blanket, during which time the creature had reached the near corner of the field, only about 100 feet away from her, Miss Chapman. And during this few minutes, now imagine taking the time to look at this. So she's standing there. She's not taking her eyes off of this thing, which is a smart move. She tells the oldest boy to go get the blanket to get the kids, but she is not breaking her laser gaze at this beast because you don't want to run the house and then come out and not know where it is. She's watching it. And that's what she's talking about. She said she took too much time to look at it because she's staring at this thing for about 5 minutes. So she got a real good look at it. She then claimed that she spread the blanket out and holding it aloft so that the kids could not see the creature and that the creature could not see them. She backed off at the double to the old field and down onto the riverbank out of sight. She then ran with the kids downstream to the neighboring village. Now, Ivan himself says he asked her a leading question about the blanket. Had her purpose in using it been to prevent her kids from seeing the creature? In accord with an alleged Native American belief that to do so would bring bad luck and often death? And he said that her reply was both prompt and surprising. She said that although she had heard the white men tell of that belief, she had not heard it from her parents or any other of her people whose advice regarding the so-called Sasquatch, and their advice had been simply not to go further than certain points up certain valleys, and to run if she saw one, and not to struggle if one ever caught her, as it might squeeze her to death by mistake. No, she said. I used the blanket because I thought it was after one of the kids, and so it might go into the house to look for them instead of following me. This seems to have been sound logic, as the creature did go into the house, and it also rummaged through an old outhouse pretty thoroughly, hauling from it a 55-gallon barrel of saltfish, breaking it open and scattering its contents about outside. Now, the irony of it is that all three of the children did die within 3 years, the two boys by drowning and the little girl on her sickbed. And just after Ivan interviewed the Chapmans, they also drowned in the Fraser River when a rowboat capsized. So you have to wonder about the Native American legend. Maybe it's true. You did lock eye contact with a Sasquatch or messed with one that bad things would happen to you and you would die. Now, Miss Chapman told Ivan that the creature was about 7.5 feet tall. She could estimate its height by the various fence and line posts standing about in the field. It had a rather small head, she said, and a very short, thick neck, kind of like Cam. In fact, really no neck at all, a point that was emphasized by William Rowe and by all others who claim to have seen one of these creatures. Ivan goes on to say that its body was entirely human in shape, except that it was immensely thick throughout its chest and its arms were exceptionally long. She did not see the feet, which were covered by the grass. Now, its shoulders, she said, were very wide, and this one had no breast, so from Miss Chapman's opinion, she assumed it was male, though she did not see any male genitalia due to the long hair covering its groin. She was most definite on one point, though. She said the naked parts of its face and its hands were much darker than its hair, and it appeared to be almost black. Now, George Chapman, her husband, returned home from his work on the railroad that day shortly before 6 p.m. in the evening and by a route that passed the village so that he saw no one to tell him about what happened. You got to remember, this is 1941. No cell phones, no beepers, nothing. Now, when he reached his house, he immediately saw the woodshed door battered in and spotted enormous humanoid footprints all around the house. At this point, he was greatly alarmed, for he, like all of his people, had heard since childhood about the big wild men of the mountains, though he did not hear the word Sasquatch until after this incident. Now, he called for his family and then dashed through the house. Then he spotted the foot tracks of his wife and kids going off towards the river. Now, he followed these tracks, and he picked them up again on the sand beside the river and saw them going off downstream without any of the giant footprints following. So this made him feel a lot better. Somewhat relieved, he was retracing his steps when he stumbled across the giant's foot tracks on the riverbank farther upstream. Now, these had come down out of the potato patch, which lay between the house and the river. He milled about by the river looking around and then had gone back through the old field toward the foot of the mountains, where they disappeared into the heavy growth. Now, returning to the house, relieved to know that the tracks of all four of his family had gone off downstream to the village, George Chapman went to examine the woodshed. Now, in his interview with Ivan, after 18 years, he still expressed a voluble astonishment that any living thing, even a 7-foot-6-inch man with barrel chest, could lift a 55-gallon tub of saltfish and break it open without even using a single tool. He confirmed that the creature's height, after finding a number of long brown hairs stuck in the slab wood lintel of the doorway, above the level of his own head. Now, George Chapman then went off to the village, you know, to look for his family, and he found them in a state of calm collapse. He gathered them up and invited his father-in-law and two others to return with him to the house for protection of his family when he was away at work. Now, the foot tracks returned every night for a week, and on two separate occasions, the dogs that the Chapmans had taken with them to set up all of a sudden broke out into violent barking at exactly 2 o'clock in the morning on both incidences. Now, the Sasquatch did not, however, attack them or apparently touch either the house or the woodshed, but the whole business was too unnerving, and the family finally moved out, and they never went back. Now, after a long chat about this and other matters, Miss Chapman suddenly told Ivan something very significant just as he was leaving. Now, she said it made an awful funny noise. He said that he asked her if she could imitate the noise for him, but it was her husband who did it, and saying that he had heard it twice that night during the week after the first incident. He then proceeded to utter exactly the same strange gurgling whistle that the men in California, who he interviewed at another time, said that they had heard a Bigfoot call, and they had given it to Ivan. Now, this is a sound I cannot reproduce in print, he points out, but I can assure you that it's unlike anything I have ever heard given by man or beast anywhere in the world. To him, he said that this information is of greatest significance, that in a Native American couple in British Columbia should give out with exactly the same strange sound in connection with a Sasquatch that two highly educated white men did over 600 miles south in connection with California's Bigfoot, he points out, is incredible. If this is all a hoax or a publicity stunt or a mass hallucination, as some people have claimed, how does it happen that this noise, which defies description, always sounds the same, no matter who has tried to reproduce it for me? These were probably the last words on the Sasquatch that the Chapmans uttered, and I absolutely refuse to listen to anybody who might say they were lying. Admittedly, honest men are such a rarity as possibly to be non-existent, but I have met a few who could qualify, and I put the Chapmans near the head of the list. Ivan T. Sanderson. So what an incredible story. You know, the woman's out doing the chores, you know, hanging clothes on a clothesline. The kids are playing. The kid comes out and says there's a giant cow coming out of the woods. The woman looks. She knows exactly what it is, although she's never seen one before. It's a hairy man. That's definitely not a cow. She gathers up the kids. And she had the insight to know that she didn't want the thing to see the kids, because that's what she thought it was after. And she might have been right. And, you know, for Ivan to interview the couple and for them to, you know, try to make a sound, to try to mimic the sound that they heard. And Ivan points out that he's talked to other people and the sound is exactly the same. I mean, I have to agree with him. What's the chances of that? But that's not the only story. And there's hundreds of stories of Sasquatch. Here's another interesting one. This took black. This took place in 1965, when American headlines were filled with a very strange story that occurred in Monroe County in Michigan. Now, according to a police statement given by 17-year-old Christina Van Aker and her mother, now Ruth Owens, says that the pair were driving home one evening when there was a loud thud, as though her car had hit something. Not seeing anything in the headlights, as perplexed Christina rolled down the driver's side window to see if there was anything lying in the road. She assumed she hit a deer or a squirrel or something. As soon as she did so, a huge arm covered in black hair thrust itself through the window and smashed Christina's head against the car door, knocking her unconscious. Now, Christina's screaming mother leapt from the car and got a good look at the attacker, which she claimed stood 7 feet tall. She said it was covered head to toe in jet black hair and growled like a mad dog. Now, Ruth's screams alerted nearby neighbors, who came running out to investigate, and by the time they reached the car, the monster had vanished back into the woodlands. Paramedics and the police were called, and Christina received a black eye but no major injuries. Now, when questioned later, Christina didn't really have an idea about what happened because she was knocked unconscious. It was all a bit fuzzy. She remembers hitting something in the road, but doesn't remember the arm coming through the window. Doesn't remember it slamming her head into the door. But her mother certainly did. And her mother, until her dying day, confessed that this happened. They were driving. They hit this thing. It attacked her daughter and then ran back into the woods. So, you know, I don't know, man. If you're ever on the road and you hit something, if you don't know what it is, you know, don't pull over. Just get out of there. There's another story. There's hundreds of stories on the BFRO website if you go over there. And this one has to be one of the most incredible ones I've ever read. It's simply known as the Siege of Hanobia. Now, check this out. Now, according to the BFRO website, these incidents took place at a rural homestead outside the town of Hanobia, Oklahoma, in January of the year 2000. It says some BFRO contacts went to visit the family. They stayed overnight and were impressed. Weeks later, television stations and newspapers in Oklahoma mentioned these incidents but never told the whole story. Now, apparently, this took place in the middle of January in the year 2000, and the first message received by the BFRO went to the uncle of the Hanobia family, and this is it, and this is what it says. It says, "Too many incidents to mention here. Please have someone contact us. This is no hoax, and my brother is afraid for his family. This creature is getting bolder every time it returns. This thing, whatever it is huge. It walks upright, smells like musky urine or even burned hair. He repeatedly comes back in the early morning hours just after midnight and harasses them until just before dawn. It has on more than one occasion tried to enter their home. We don't know where else to turn. Everyone we talk to about it thinks we are crazy when we mention it. Please, we don't know what to do. I know that something needs to be done. There are stories we could tell you that would make your hair stand on your neck." Now, the message went on to explain that the family was having these problems over the past 2 years with one or more of these nuisance animals that were prowling around outside of their home at night. They didn't know what they were, but they certainly knew that they were not bears. They talked about how they didn't want to believe it. Like, they've heard the stories, but they didn't want to believe it. And I could imagine. I mean, put yourself in that situation. Like, man, this just can't be. But they had to recognize it because the animals were lurking around the house. The animals were stealing deer meat, they said, from inside a freezer that was located in an outside tool shed. And they were starting to come on the porch. I mean, it was escalating. They said that the situation escalated when the animals tried to actually get into their home. And at one point, the father went outside to confront the animal. He got a good look at one, and he took a shot at what he claimed was a Bigfoot running back into the woods. So the BFRO, which is the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, contacted the family after receiving the report. And the man they spoke with first was the brother of the father of the family. He insisted that they weren't kidding around, and at least one Bigfoot was coming around the homestead almost every single night. It was coming onto the porch. It was messing with one of the windows. It was wiggling the doorknob as if it wanted to get into the house. And it had even been stealing deer meat out of the freezer that was kept in an open-sided outbuilding. Whatever it was, he said it wasn't alone. and the family could hear chattering and screaming from the hills when the prowlers were ever, whenever they were near the house. Now, the wife, she became too fearful to remain at the house, and so she and the kids were relocated temporarily while the men armed themselves with assault rifles and prepared to defend the homestead against the nightly prowlers. On the night before the first message was received, the father fired at one of the animals and thought he might have hit it. The following morning, he found a substantial trail of blood in the yard and thought it was from the animal that he shot. Now, one of the BFRO investigators, an airline pilot from Ohio, offered to visit the scene to hopefully collect some of the blood that was left in wake of the previous night's shooting. Now, another BFRO investigator made contact with the residents by phone and began updating other BFRO members via email. Now, these are some of his actual emails that are posted on the website, so I'm going to be reading it in the first person. He says, "I finally spoke with the shooter last night. When I spoke with him directly, I got the facts straight about the situation at the house and the blood. The shooter, his name is Tim. And his brother, the one who originally contacted us, his name is Michael. And Tim says it was definitely a Bigfoot that he shot at, and he thought he might have hit it. It was approximately 70 yards away, and it was at night. There is a trail of blood in the woods, but it leads to the fresh deer kill, not away from the area where the Bigfoot was standing when he fired at it. Now, Tim says that the Bigfoot ran after he shot at it, but then he and his brother could hear it and others on the hillside for several hours after the shooting. That suggests to me that he didn't even wound it, and all the blood is from the deer. Now, Miles and Roger, who are two of the investigators that went out to the site, will be there in a few hours and see if this all for themselves and thoroughly look over the area, and they will be armed. Now, Roger's father, a very skilled 72-year-old bear hunter, will remain at the property, possibly for a few days. Tim says he doesn't care what we do there, but if the animal comes back to the house and scratches at the window again, he's going to go out and try to kill it. He's had to send his kids to stay with relatives, and he and his wife are clearly terrified. Now, the volunteer, Roger Roberts, is a well-respected veteran private investigator in Oklahoma. He was in military intelligence during the Vietnam conflict and then a police officer for many years in Oklahoma before becoming a private investigator. He's on a first-name basis with law enforcement officials throughout Oklahoma and is very familiar with every jurisdiction. Now, both Miles and I were very impressed by him after speaking with him at length over the telephone. Roger chuckled when I said we were wondering why Tim hasn't called the police about this. Roger said that there are hardly any sheriffs in this area because there's a lot of weed growing in southern Oklahoma, and the federal government routinely does unannounced sweeps and arrests crooked deputies. The backwoods people in this area do not talk to the police if they can help it. Roger says this mentality is the norm for southeastern Oklahoma and firmly rooted over generations. Now, Tim wants us to take care of this problem. He doesn't want the Bigfoot coming back to his house anymore, and he doesn't care what it takes to make it stop. He will not move and will not hold back from shooting at it if it returns. Now, I told him that we were sending some people who will help him figure out what should be done. I said the bear hunter will shoot if there's no other way to handle it, but in any case, to let us, the BFRO, handle it. There may be no other way to handle it because tranquilizing it would be, as we learned last year, basically impossible to arrange, especially if it needs to be done within a few weeks. This game may be over much sooner than that. The presence of more people with rifles at the location will be the best deterrent to this animal. Whatever it is, while the situation is being assessed, and we're recording audio and video there, we have always known that in the natural course of things, there would someday be an overly aggressive Bigfoot that would get itself killed by someone protecting his or family or property. This may be the one, inevitably. Now that's where this blog stopped. And then a few days later, another entry was made on the BFRO's website. And this time it said, Miles and Roger and Roger's father are at the location now and are setting up. I spoke with Tim's wife briefly. She reiterated how frightened they were of this thing and described some of the incidents. Far from jumping to conclusions, she said her and her husband had denied the whole thing to themselves over the last few years. It wasn't until after the deer meat, which is three complete quarter deer, had all disappeared from the large chest-high freezer in the outdoor shed that the intruder started trying to get into the house at night. It didn't just scratch at the window, she said. It had pulled off parts of the window and was getting bolder in its attempts to get into the house. The recent deer kill found outside had not been shot. One of its legs was violently twisted and broken. It had clearly been carried and not dragged to the spot where it was found. The most interesting thing was how the predator pulled out the internal organs. The belly of the deer had not been opened up. The opening was up between the neck and the rib cage. The predator, whatever it is, made a hole large enough to stick its arm in and apparently reached down from above the rib cage and pulled out the organs. Now, Miles and Roger are surely photographing all of this right now. There's no doubt in the lady's mind the main question. She's adamant that it's not a bear. The loud vocalizations, tree thrashing, chattering, and whistling outside the house at night are the most noticeable reoccurring things. There was considerably more noise during the night the deer was killed. Note that the vocalization and the tree thrashing aspects were not present at either of the South Carolina locations or the Kentucky location. I expect our three guys will at least hear something tonight. I will keep you posted. And that's again where the blog ends. But then, only 12 hours later, another entry was added. And here's what it says. It says, I was on the phone with the people at the house last night for a few hours. I was asking questions and listening to what was happening. Things got very hectic this time. And at one point, the guys were actually shooting from the porch while I was on the phone with them. I figured it would be best to let them go at that point and said I'd talk to them later. I don't know as of yet all the highlights of what happened. All I know is what I heard last night on the phone and what I had heard from Tim and Michael this morning. I haven't heard from Miles or Roger yet, but they will report on what happened and what they brought back with them, if anything. As of this morning, they did not have a body, according to Tim and Michael. Now, this morning, Miles and Roger went to check out a cave in the area where one had been seen in during the day, according to another local witness who came to the speak with both Miles and Roger yesterday. Apparently, they all saw a few Bigfoots last night near the property. I don't know how much, if anything, was gotten on tape. I do know that it was pouring rain all last night, which complicated things greatly. With the recording equipment, you know. I assume they are on their way home. I'm going to try to call Roger in a few minutes. I'll keep you posted. And from my conversations yesterday and early this morning with the residents, we think we figured out what is so different about the situation. The underlying cause seems to be that lots and lots of deer congregate on Tim's property. He's got 30 acres in the mountains, and he plants Austrian snow peas all over the property, especially near the house, because he says that the deer go crazy for them, especially this time of year. People plant these plants specifically to attract deer. It makes it easier to hunt. Many deer come to feed on his property, and there's a deer overpopulation problem in the area to start with. So, his property is apparently an effective magnet for local deer. There are so many deer that he doesn't even have to get off his porch to go hunting, he says. He often bags lots of deer on his own property right off the porch, and he's been doing it for years now. Now, him and Michael said that on some occasions the deer carcasses were snatched away by something. We didn't get into details about each of those incidents, but some of those incidents involved frozen quartered venison being taken from a big freezer in an outside shed with no door. The freezer has no lock, but does have a very heavy lid that needs to be lifted. The frozen deer parts were all taken eventually. When there were none left, Tim and his wife said that's when these started hearing things trying to attempt to get in the house. He tried to bang on the window and loud hollering outside. A few times, Tim ran out after it, but it would always flee into the woods. The first time he got a good look at it was the night he shot at it just a few nights ago. The most baffling thing for all of us was why these things weren't running away after being shot at. They'd pull back a bit in the trees, then move to a different part of the hillside and could be seen through the brush when the spotlights reflected off their eyes. Now, Miles personally told me on the phone last night that both he and Roger were seeing what Michael and Tim were describing. in terms of red eyes and other movement in the trees. Supposedly, a lot more happened after I got off the phone. Tim and Michael were trying to kill the animals. Apparently, there was more than one target at some points. I asked Roger on the phone if it was possible that these guys were just freaking out and shooting at raccoons in the trees. But Roger, he sounded very nervous. He didn't want to talk much. He just replied, "No, this is serious business. They've definitely got a problem here." I called back a while later and was only able to talk to Miles and Roger for a few seconds. Miles' last words about what was happening is, "It's pretty much shoot to kill at the moment." Now, this morning I asked Tim if he ever spotlights deer at night from his front porch, and he said he does. Then we established that indeed, most of the time when he's spotlighting in the woods and shooting from his porch is when he's doing the most hunting for the deer, not Bigfoots. So, if the animals who aren't running away from the loud gunshots are some kind of predator, like Bigfoots, that's been in the area a while, then those predators may have noticed that sometimes after those spotlighting gunshot incidents are heard, a wounded deer would sometime later be struggling up the hill trying to get away, and would be much easier to catch. Deer will always take off running when they hear gunshots, especially within 50 yards. That's how they know they weren't seeing the deer's eyes while the shooting was all going on. The animals may have thought Tim and Michael were taking shots at deer, as they usually do, and that's maybe why they aren't running away. Tim seemed stunned when I explained the deer connection. He slurred out of a long, steady undertone, "Oh my God," as if it finally all made sense to him. The Bigfoots might be hanging around the property waiting to grab a wounded deer. You know, an easy meal. I explained that these predators might not understand that they are the intended targets now, because all they would see is a spotlight shining through the trees toward them and then a very loud bang from an assault rifle. The animals may be expecting to see wounded deer running toward them up the hill. They may have watched that pattern for years now. It's possible they either don't realize that there are bullets whizzing by them, or they've gotten used to it. At that range, the shot is so loud, you wouldn't hear a bullet hitting the trees next to you anyways. And they wouldn't see the guns that are pointing right at them because the spotlights would be in their eyes at the moment. It may appear to be business as usual with all the shooting going on. Now, the blog goes on a while longer, you know, between this researcher and Matt Moneymaker asking questions to the BFR investigator who is following Roger and Miles' every move. They go back and forth for a while. You can read more about it. I'll put links to it in the show notes if you want to go over there and read all that. I don't have time to read all of that today. But anyways, the two investigators had seen enough that they wanted to leave the situation. They wanted to put their heads together and come up with a plan on how to capture one of these things or even kill one of these things. Because his family, they're being terrorized. Their property's overrun with these critters. The critters are trying to get in their house. And the wife's terrified. The kids are terrified, and rightly so. They got to come up with a solution. And, you know, this family's kind of held hostage because if they report it to the local police or anybody else, people just laugh at them. They're like, "What?" And I never really thought about it. If you think about it, like, where would you go? Who would you call? Well, you'd call the BFRO, I guess. If you had a problem with real ghosts or poltergeists, I mean, you're going to call Ghostbusters, right? So that's what they did. Now, Miles and Rogers shot some videotape that says on the website of the situation with their camcorder. It says they tried to document the eyes on the hillside, but it was too fleeting to capture on tape. They said that the heavy rain complicated matters by forcing them to stay on the porch most of the night. And they said the following morning they looked for tracks on the hillside, but due to thick leaf litter and the heavy rains, there were no tracks that could be clearly distinguished from the boot impressions of the residents. And by the end of the day, it was decided by both Miles and Roger that the residents could adequately protect themselves. They said they didn't need another hunter waiting on the porch. The residents weren't interested in allowing a surveillance project or anything else that would require attracting the animals back near the home. They just wanted the Bigfoots to be gone and to get the message to keep out. Now, there was a few other reasons listed that the investigators were not inclined to stay any longer. They said that the nervous shooting by the residents made it a hazardous, unpredictable situation. The investigators had to cautiously position themselves much of the time to keep out of any potential line of fire. They never knew when the crackle in the brush might lead to an unfortunate accident. There was also an inherent conflict between different objectives, deterrence and research. Even doing research on adjacent land wasn't a safe alternative, they point out. The investigators eventually packed up. They thanked the residents for their hospitality, told them to be safe, and asked to be contacted if any evidence of any sort became available. And it never did. So, as with any small town situation, word got out about what was happening at the property. Not only did everyone seem to know what was going on, but the location soon came under surveillance by the state fish and game office. The residents could no longer do hunting off the back porch or front porch, or shoot fairly indiscriminately into the night. The family was eventually persuaded to stop trying to shoot the creatures and instead deal with the underlying cause of the problem. They needed to get rid of all the deer meat and stop hunting deer on the property. The increased presence of fish and game vehicles in the area made the argument an easier sell, and it wasn't long before they indicated that everything died down. They said the Bigfoot seemed to keep a greater distance. They were heard off and on howling from nearby hilltops, but they didn't ever try to enter the home again. The family heard less and less vocalizations as the weeks went on, and eventually the vocalizations ceased altogether, and it was assumed that the animals, whatever they were, moved off into a different area. There was plenty of places for them to go. The property is in the Kiamichi Mountains, on the edge of the vast Wachita National Forests. Now, you know, what are we to think about this story? I mean, the BFRO website is a site where people post their encounters. You know, it's supposed to be a place where people can go and credibly report what they're seeing. And they actually have investigators, much like MUFON does, where if you have an incident, somebody will interview you. If you're having activity, they'll even drive out or fly out to your property. They'll take a look. I mean, these people are treating it serious. So I'm assuming any story on here is as real as they try to make it. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, it's not creepypasta. They're assuming that this is real. And the two investigators in this case, they went out there. They saw the crazy shooting. They saw activity. They heard some strange noises. They apparently saw the eye shine that the men were reporting. They said they did not look like raccoons, but they weren't able to get any photographs. Again, not able to reproduce any video or photographs, but they saw it. And these are people that are into this thing, so I have to believe them. I mean, was this family up in the mountains, you know, of southeastern Oklahoma really being terrorized by a pack of or a family of Bigfoot looking for venison? I don't know. Did they raid the freezer and then try to gain entry into the residence looking for more food? Or were the people just misidentifying what they were seeing? I mean, could it have been a bear? Could it have been bears? There's bears in that area. I mean, I know from hunting experiences of my own, when out hunting in bear country, you know, they tell you never to fire from the same spot twice. Bears can triangulate your position and come hunting for you or whatever you've killed. And to me, this sounds eerily similar in this particular case. Or, playing the devil's advocate, are Bigfoots capable of learning the same thing as the bears? They've perhaps learned over the years that hunters use rifles, and whenever you hear a rifle, that means food is readily available soon. Also, when in bear country, forest rangers and game wardens would tell you never to leave food in your vehicle or in your cabin or tent, because bears, they'll break in and ransack both your automobile, your home, or your tent in search of food. Again, Bigfoots or Big Feet or Sasquatches or Sasqueech, whatever you want to call them, they may have learned the same behavior as bears. I don't know. And I know that you don't know either. I just like to share the story, so I hope you like that. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Noodles. You are too concerned with what was and what will be. There's a saying, yesterday is history, tomorrow is a mystery, but today is a gift. That is why it is called the present.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives, once again, talking about what is Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yowie, Yeren, Almasti, whatever you want to call it. They seem to see these things everywhere. And I think that's the most interesting thing to me. I can't even talk. Listen, it got me stuttering. This is a topic I've been fascinated with since I was a kid. I'm not a like Bigfoot only person. I think there's several people that are really into Bigfoot and nothing else. It's one of those things. It's like one of the oldest stories I was familiar with. Like I was familiar with Bigfoot long before I was like alien abduction.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't introduced to any of that stuff till I was a teenager. But I remember as a young child hearing about Bigfoot. And of course, you know, I saw the Patterson-Gimlin film as a kid. And I'll tell you now, I'm 42 years old now, and I still don't have any better idea of what I read the first time I read about Bigfoot as like an 8 or 9 year old. There are weeks where you can talk to me and I'm like, yeah, man, I think there's probably one out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be other weeks where I'm like, man, there's no way that could be real. Right. But I have to bring this up. I know I've talked about it hundreds of times before. If you're new to the show, then maybe you'll enjoy hearing it. If you're old to the show, then you know exactly what I'm going to say is why are so many people seeing that from all over the world? I mean, there's like literally other than Antarctica, just because there's like nobody there, or the government won't let you onto Antarctica because you might see the Earth's edge and fall off.
Here we go.
All the other continents, there are their own version of Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. I mean, why are so many people seeing the same thing? And, you know, whether it's the Almaty of like the mountains of Russia, or the Yeti, or the Yowie down in Australia, or the Yeren in China, the Skunk Ape, the Sasquatch, you know, it has dozens of names even here in North America. Why are so many people seeing the same thing? Is it just folklore and myth left over from our ancestors' great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents?
Wow.
Telling the stories because there were, you know, Neanderthals and things, and that's, it's just the story's kind of been left over. Or is there truly something out there in the woods? I mean, people from all over, different types of jobs, from scientists to blue-collar people, to hunters, to biologists. I mean, look at Dr. Jeff Meldrum. People claim to see bizarre things in the woods. There's physical evidence left over, hair. There's plaster castings made of footprints. There's apparently scalps of the Yeti or the mm-hmm. hand. You know, and they even did that one study not too long ago of the hair, and the guy found out that it was some kind of bear, mm-hmm. a cross between a polar bear and a brown grizzly or something over there, a Russian grizzly. But, you know, and then there's always the theory that it's extraterrestrial, that Sasquatch is like Chewbacca, that there's UFO seen, and then shortly after there's lots of sightings of Bigfoot. There's other stories of being interdimensional. You know, that's, I know you don't have an answer, but that's what makes the Bigfoot thing so interesting, is it wasn't like there's 8 sightings of it, and that was it. And you have to ponder and wonder, like Mokele Mbembe, you know, it's a very small amount of sightings that you can go to, maybe 20 sightings total. Bigfoot won't go away. Every culture, everywhere, people are seeing it all the time. And I have talked to people before I had this show, personally, who told me that they saw something like that. I mean, and like, what would be the reason to just, on a whim, tell somebody something, not knowing that later they would have a radio show? You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? I know that you've talked about on the show before, personally knowing hunters
mm-hmm.
who saw something so terrifying that they decided to give up the sport and then later died. You know, not related because they saw Bigfoot, that's what killed them. But people that were great outdoorsmen that would decide to just give up their hobby because of something they saw. This is a person who's familiar with black bear. This is a person that's familiar with all forms of, you know, javelina or hog or coyotes with mange.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what this person saw. So is it something that's a mass hallucination, much like a lot of people hallucinate these grays? Are they real, or is it just a common hallucination? Could somehow a common hallucination when you're in the woods is you think you see a large hairy ape? Why do we never find the bones? Why? Now, we've talked about before, I've been in the woods my whole life. I've never seen mountain lion bones.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean they're not there. But you can go to a zoo or something, and you can see a mountain lion. The guy at the knife store, House of Blades, used to have one as a pet in there.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid. Walking in there as a real young kid, I told my dad, there's a mountain lion back there. My dad's like, there's no mountain lion. You talking about a stuffed one? I'm like, no, man, this thing's real. He's like, nah, let me see. And sure enough, he's like, holy cow, that's a mountain lion. Yeah. I think I was making it up.
I'm not joking about this.
I know what, you know, mounts look like and what's real. So, I mean, like, what are your thoughts on Bigfoot? Why is it such a big phenomenon? Why are so many people into it? And why the hell haven't we ever found any bones?
I think it's one of those things. It's next to ufology, it's the easiest thing to be into.
Right.
But what makes it fun is, at least for me, this is the way I break it down. If you walked outside and looked up, you can see a lot of sky.
Yeah.
Right? So you can sit out there in the dark and look in the sky with binoculars and see things moving, and you can guess this, that, and the other. If you walk out into the woods, you can't see that far. So ufology probably takes the steps as being the easiest to really, really get into researching and just looking at the sky and star watching. But something is very romantic, it seems, to be behind the idea of Bigfoot and the fact of them being out there. And I'm with you, is when I started this whole thing and we decided to start doing a show, I really hoped that I would find people that could put me in an area where I could have an experience, you know, where they could go, yeah, I can take you someplace right now.
You'd get some closure. You could, yes. You would feel satisfied one way or another, but you probably don't feel any more than when you started, right?
I don't feel any different than the day we turned these microphones on. I still have no idea. I hear all these stories of, and then I also hear all these stories, you know, for or against, and I'm no further along. All I do is know more stories to base my I don't know opinion on it.
Right. Yeah.
That's all there is I've, out of everything I've learned, I don't know if it's part of me wants it to be there, and then part of me thinks it's not possible, but the part that says it's there is the part that never wants it found either.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
it needs to be a mystery. I like it when the world has mystery in it, but I don't know, man. It is the, out of all the stuff we cover, like, it's easy to brush off, like, for things of like Hat Man or shadow beings or something, as your mind's playing tricks on yourself, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
People can easily brush that off as, oh, well, it's just a shadow in the dark and your mind freaked out and that's it. You know, and I'm not saying that's not, that's what's happened to everybody that's experienced it. I'm just saying that's easier to brush off than the idea of an 8 or even, like we've talked about, 8 or 9 foot tall monkey man running around in the forest. Because you're like, well, what would he eat? Where would he live? Nobody stumbled upon one that died of old age and they was a little teepee or something, a lean-to built that it lived in. Like, where do they sleep?
Well, they do. Every once in a while, the people will say that they find these wooden structures.
Yeah, but they're not that well constructed in order to keep something out of the weather. You know what I'm saying? Like, most of the time, they look like they just lay on the ground and get up and just roam. And if they roamed that much, wouldn't somebody have... I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
That's
genetic or biologically to me for it to be out
there. Well, right.
But yet they're there.
People
report them.
And that's what makes it so frustrating is you're not talking about like just British Columbia.
Yeah.
You're talking, it's a worldwide phenomenon. People are seeing them everywhere. Yet at the same time, no one's ever found the remains of one over the whole world too.
Mm-hmm.
Why so elusive? And I think that's the part that my brain struggles with the most is you want to believe it because you see an incredible video or an incredible photo or you hear a heartfelt email or someone meets us at a public venture and venue and tells me the story and I can tell they're real, or somebody that I know off air tells me a story, then you're like, man, it has to be real. But then once again, you start going, man, how could we never find any scat?
Mm-hmm.
We never find any skeletal bones. Well, maybe they bury them. Well, maybe they do. But, you know, there's hundreds of people murdered every year, and maybe 15, 20 years later, somebody's building a building. They start excavating. Look, they found the skeletal remains of the person that was murdered. They find those bodies all the time. So if Bigfoot is so close to us humans, but no one ever finds the bones? Ever?
Yeah, ever.
Accidentally? Anywhere on planet Earth?
Yeah.
That's what makes it hard to believe. Also, you know, what if it was a real live thing and the last one died out like in 1938? Or something, or right after the Patterson-Gimlin film, I'm sorry, in the 60s. Maybe that was it. Now there's no more. But there was once. I don't know. An interesting subject matter. Very, very frustrating, though. If you're hearing a bunch of, like, in the background, I got a new mechanical keyboard, and it makes a lot more racket than my old one. But I just like the way it feels. I don't know if it's the... I like the way the keys like hug my fingers. It feels better for writing than the new
it
flat ones.
It is huge.
Like the my Mac keyboard, it's flat. I don't care for it. My laptop too over here. It looks really cool, but I don't like the way it feels. I like the big bulky. It feels like I'm using a typewriter.
It does look good.
And you like it how the keys
glow. I like how the keys glow.
Yeah, very.
I got you something else. I know that you're a big fan of doing yard work and stuff and getting outside and messing around and all this stuff. Folks, back down there in Florida again, I don't know what y'all are up to. I have no idea. This happened last week. Neighbors, listen to this. Neighbors complain about Florida man He's at it again. Doing yard work naked.
You can't do that?
Police say it's legal.
Man, weed eating's got to be tough, man.
Right?
Throwing neighbors, around all them rocks and stuff.
Slinging up those grass burrs and stuff. Neighbors in Stuart, Florida are irritated with their fellow resident who has been doing yard work in the nude. Melissa Nye, a neighbor, told WPBF-TV this. I came out Saturday night to put the trash out, and I look over, and he's bent over, winding up his hose, is what it says.
and I'm like,
that is my view of the neighborhood. Now, I thought winding up your hose would be illegal, but apparently it's not. Now, it says he works on his car, and he does it naked.
That's risky, too, bro. That's,
dude, you got to make sure it's not running. Can you imagine trying to change the oil or changing out your brakes in the nude? It says everyone's called the police. And he's just out there doing his yard work, whatever he needs to do outside, naked. And another neighbor believes the man should have some respect for children who live in the area. He says, kids catch the bus here, and it's wrong. This is Charlie Estes was telling him. It says, but police say they can't do anything about it. As long as the man isn't touching himself inappropriately, police can't tell the man to put his clothes on because he's on his own property. Now, Estes goes on to say this, I have seen these people stand on their front step, buck naked, both of them, and talk to the police officer and the sheriff's department. The sheriff's department told me to just turn my head. Said, no, we asked, now this is WPBF-TV, asked to interview the naked folks. No, he don't want to talk. He declined because he says he's a very private person, is what he said. I'm like, you're standing out there in Florida with your junk in the breeze, and you're a private person.
Yeah, let's talk about this for a minute. Now, there's a nudist colony.
Here we go.
There's a nudist colony in this county up there by Poolville. You aware of that? It's been there forever.
Don't act like you ain't been up there.
No,
yes, I'm aware of it.
No, I haven't been by there. I would like to kind of fly a drone over just to kind of see what's going on. But
it's never the people you want to see naked.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Why is it that all the people that do this or live there, they're never the type of people you want to see? So when you hear about it, you're like that
me
sounds
naked.
Awesome.
Nobody wants to see me naked. Nobody.
I'd have to say, if I was a neighbor, I'd have to break out the Gammo or the Daisy or the Crossman.
How about, instead of that, how about just Airsoft?
Well, there you go.
Just like
they're
Airsoft.
They're not that accurate,
them.
Though. Well, maybe the good ones are.
It doesn't have to be that accurate. You're naked.
Yeah, I could only imagine trying to take the trash out and some guy's bent over reeling up his hose.
Yeah, winding it up. What? Look.
The guy's doing it for attention. I mean, let's face it. It's always men.
Is naked?
It's very rare that it's women. If this is a man thing, I don't know what's wrong with them. And they want to pretend like, oh, well, I'm just, you know, I'm not offending
anybody. It's nature, Kyle.
You are offending people.
It's nature.
Stop it already. Stop it.
I don't understand it. I don't understand the need to be naked like that.
You don't understand because there is not a need. There isn't a need.
And as pale and pasty as I am, I look like a catfish's belly. If I went out naked, I could only imagine what the sunburns would be like.
That's like the twins. They like to watch Naked and Afraid on TV. It's like a survival show. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't get the point.
Well, they're trying to catch a little bit of that naked chick. They're at the age now, they're trying to see a naked girl.
I think so. And I started remembering back in the day when you heard about somebody's brother's brother had like a copy of Playboy. You're like,
right.
Oh, man. We're pedaling our bikes up there.
You're trying to watch the static on the TV.
If it pixelates just right.
Is she naked?
Like they're too young to know about, you know, the internet's right there, boys.
Yeah.
They'll find out soon enough.
Oh, yeah. They for sure will.
Halloween is approaching, so it's that time of year, folks. If you have any scary stories, any experiences or sightings you'd like to share with me and Kim, please don't hesitate. Send them over to expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. If we get some really good ones, maybe we'll do a special episode where we read, you know, stories of encounters of listeners only. That would be really cool.
Send us some crazy pics. We'll post them up on of all of y'all's crazy like Halloween outfits. Email them to us or send us to us on Facebook or Insta, and we'll start posting them up on the Instagram page and the Facebook page of something crazy. If you're doing some crazy crypto outfits or something like that, post some stuff up like that. We'll start posting it.
Yep. And if you want to call the show, the number is 817-945-3828. You can follow us on all forms of social media. And don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. There's extra episodes over there every month. Signing up is easy. Go to the website, click on the tab. $5 a month, you'll get extra episodes every month, including the entire back catalog, which is like 3.5 years worth. It's one of the cheapest things going. I mean, you can't hardly get a donut and a cup of coffee for $5. You can get hours upon hours of Expanded Perspectives for only $5 a month. So check that out. Hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.